Oh, we love talking to Nancy Weckelbaum.
Weckelbaum.
Weckelbaum. Every time we talk to her, she has something new. We've been interviewing her for years, and there's always something new. Her main line is Gracious Gourmet. She keeps expanding her offerings, and she now has a whole new line called, I love to talk about sexy titles, Hot Squeeze, Nancy. It's wonderful.
That's right.
So just briefly for listeners, if you could, how old is the company and what did you start out selling?
The company, believe it or not, is approximately 18 years old.
Okay.
And hard to believe, and we're still here. And I think we make delicious condiments, jams,
yes,
jellies, tapenades. And now we've branched off into something brand new, the beginning of some other intros also that are, a little bit outside the box, shall I say.
Yeah, well, I mean, you personally, you're always looking for something new to do. I mean, you really, and you're so inventive and creative.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, but I mean, we love all of your products. We like the old ones. We like the second tier ones, and we've put Hot Squeeze on just about everything, which your copy that you promote with says you can put it on everything, and we do, and we haven't even found, I mentioned to you before we started recording that I even put it on braised octopus.
Oh my gosh.
And it worked well.
That's a new one we'll have to add to the list. I haven't heard that one before, but actually, if I can just interject before I get into all the details of Hot Squeeze.
Yeah.
You know, the ingredients in Hot Squeeze makes it very wide-ranging in its uses. So there's soy sauce, which connotes Asian food. There's orange juice, which could be, Caribbean. It could be American. It could be, it could be anything fresh, Mediterranean as well. There's vinegar in it, just apple cider vinegar, which gives it a hint of acidity. And then there is chipotle peppers, which
yes,
give it a smoky and a slightly spicy finish also. So, the spicy is more, could be Mexican food. It could be, lots of, I'm just trying.
Well, I mean, Peter, talk about gilding the lily. Even used it with some kind of a Hatch chili sauce.
Yeah, that was in the middle of the affair.
Anything southwestern, the southern part of this country loves spicy food. Sometimes I found when I started the Gracious Gourmet that, New Englanders, spices are limited to salt,
yeah,
pepper, cinnamon, and very, safe spices.
Yeah. It's
but
like Peter's mother.
The southern part of the country, and, the spices are much more daring. And
yeah,
I think that's permeating all over the country and with younger people, too.
All over the
young
world,
people
I think,
love
actually.
Spicy food. And all you have to do is go to the supermarket and look at the space that's devoted to hot sauces these days. When I was growing up, Tabasco was the product and the only product. And now there's, hundreds of hot pepper sauces. So,
well, as you know, people send us samples all the time. And when our son was still single and living at home, he prided himself on being able to take all these hot sauces, how kids do. And
sure,
we had one bottle in the fridge that had a skull and crossbones on the front of it, and he took a swig of that, and I could, we have a 5,000 square foot house, and I could hear him screaming all over the house.
Oh my gosh.
I'd like to get into your head and find out, I mean, how do you go about this? I mean, every time we talk to you, and we talk to you a lot, you have some other idea, and you're going in some other direction, and then you perfect it, and then you move on. What is the process that leads you to keep inventing new directions and new products and new goals?
Well, you know, I think, I don't know. That's a really good question, and I am consummately interested in food, in cooking, in flavors. I, you know, go out a lot. I travel a certain amount. I see a lot. You know, my favorite stores are not dress shops, or not
right.
shopping for clothes. Forget that. I love shopping for food. I love seeing what's in the market. Some of the products I think are a little outlandish these days, but I think there's a lot of super creativity in the food mm-hmm. industry. And I think there's such an overlap of cuisines. I mean, I think that, there's, Asian, and Asian, sometimes you add American flavor
yeah.
to something that's
well, we interviewed somebody whose cookbook melded together her heritage, which was Indian, with where she lived, which is in the south of the U.S. And I mean, there's similarities there, but she made a whole new cuisine out of it.
Wow.
Here's a couple of unusual ones. You have what I guess we would call a hot sauce from Calabria.
Yeah, well, I have, I use Calabrian chilies
yes.
in
right.
a sun-dried tomato pesto.
That
sounds
great.
That's in the Gracious Gourmet line. I'm using jalapeno peppers and Aleppo peppers in a chili mango lime jam.
Oh,
I have a spicy red pepper jelly that has different chili peppers in it. So there are a number of my products that do have, and then there's, of course, the Hatch chili pesto, which has mild and spicy Hatch chilies in it.
Yeah, so, you never know, as I understand it, that if you're growing Hatch chilies, some years they're hotter than other years, and you never know what you're going to get.
Well, that's part of the advantage and disadvantage of being a farmer.
Uh-huh.
You know,
right.
every year things come out a little bit differently. That's what nature is.
Now,
yes.
what about the Korean spice that's named after mother-in-law?
Yes, I can't even pronounce that.
Right, I can't pronounce it either.
Begins with a G, and
Gongchang.
Yeah, there's a lot of there's just a lot of spicy states, but hot. Squeeze is not only about spice.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
it
tell
is
us more about
sweet.
That.
It has orange juice in it. It has some sugar in it. It is about smoky with the chipotle peppers. It has the chipotle peppers. It has the vinegar, which has a sort of sweet and sour mirror to it. And so... You know,
but is this going to be like?
Soy sauce.
Is this going to
really,
be a whole line, or is it like the one sauce you made? It's going to be
no,
what that
I'm,
is.
No, I'm hoping. I mean, we just launched this, so I want to make sure that this gains some traction. And you'll see. I hope you're both coming to the Fancy Food Show. We'll
right.
be there, and we're going to have a big introduction of Hot Squeeze. And I'm hoping this will be.
That's
we're going
good.
To try to do some different iterations of it. And also maybe some spice rubs for it also.
Oh, that's great.
So you know, we're excited. You know, nice to keep busy with these things. But the hot squeeze, as I say, is not just hot. It does have that kick of heat in it, but it's not a hot sauce. I think of a hot sauce as more one-dimensional, where it is hot. And this is this has a lot of different dimensions in it. And
yeah, well, that's what I like. I mean, my taste goes in that direction. I mean, I don't like just heat. You know, I like
totally agree with you, Ann. I totally agree with
you.
Well,
I did, you know, the Frontera Grill.
I know the Frontera Grill.
Yeah, well, anyhow, I did a chili tasting with one of the owners. What is her name now? We had to go through. She had all these chilies arranged, and we had to taste each chili, and describe it. And one of the things we were not allowed to use was heat as a flavor. And when you cut that out and you get all the other flavors in there, that's when you're really experiencing the spice.
Oh, how interesting.
It was very interesting.
There's so many different nuances. And when people talk, it's hot. You know, I agree with that hot is not necessarily, you know, it's not, hot is not a flavor.
It's not a flavor, you're right.
So it's, you know, I don't know what else to say, but I agree with you there.
Now, tell me this, when you come up with, what is the process? I've always been fascinated by how you do this. You get an idea, and then you start playing around with it?
Well, I get an idea, and I start, I sort of say, you know, look at, you know, I sort of look and say, what kind of ingredients would I want in this? You know, what do I want to be a prominent flavor? What do I want to be a more background flavor? And then
do you look around, like, is it global cuisine for get influenced by that?
I look at different cookbooks to get ideas. I look at, you know, different recipes to get, to sort of get different proportions. I look at, you know, I'll try some things myself and say, give them to friends and say, what do you think of this? And they say, well, this has too much of this or doesn't have enough of that. And you know, it's really, it's, there's a lot of different things going on. It's not just, you know, here it is.
And it's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. It is exciting.
It's discovery,
too. My son, who, frankly, you should really interview sometime, because he makes the most delicious charcuterie.
Really?
Delicious. The company's called Charlito's Cocina. And it's Spanish-inspired charcuterie.
Oh, I'd love that. Yeah.
And I'll send you his info.
Yeah, email me his contact information.
I will.
And I'll talk to him. So
he's done really well with the line. And what was I going to say? He has a very good sense of flavors and taste, so I'll bounce ideas off him.
Uh-huh.
I'll say, what do you think of this? Or, I mean, I had, you know, our spice sour cherry spread, and when I first created that, or not first created, because he wasn't in business, it was several years later, I said, you should pair this with one of your sausages. But he didn't have a sausage that was, didn't have its own flavor profile. He has a truffle sausage. He has a chorizo. He has a beer flavored sausage, and he has, you know, a variety of others.
Interesting.
And but he didn't have anything that was sort of plain. And I said, why don't you do just a plain country sausage? And he did.
Sure.
And it's not only delicious, but it also goes really well with some of, you know, the gracious gourmet condiment.
Uh-huh. So you really influenced him a lot in raising him, huh?
Well, I food was always important in our lives. My husband always said that I have food running in my veins, not blood. And
I mean, our son is pretty much like that too. And you know, he married somebody. In fact, my granddaughter has started cooking. My grandson, no, not so much. But although my grandson, his big request for a present knocked me through the wall, which he wanted an ice cream maker.
This
is a kid who does nothing but play soccer, and he's a math genius. So when he wanted an ice cream maker, I was just floored. And I thought, you did something right, you know. But my granddaughter loves, I give her cookbooks. I mean, she loves cooking. So.
Well, I think, I love, as I say, there's so much talent out there. And it's a question, how do you edit the talent to what you like?
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's so much competition now in spices. You know, I mean, I remember, who was it, who came over from France, and he couldn't even buy fresh mushrooms in the supermarket at the time. Who was that rabbit?
A famous chef in New York?
He's famous all over the world, yeah.
Alain Ducasse?
No.
The Trois Gros? Was he in New York or was he in France?
No, he was in this country.
The thing I remember most about him, and I can't remember his name any more than you guys can, but he was horrified that he couldn't buy anything other than button mushrooms.
Yeah, those canned in a can.
But here's the really strange one. Guess who he was the master chef for? He was master chef for a hotel chain, which shall be nameless, but I'll name it in just a second. But see if you can figure out who it might be. They had red roofs. if that helps you.
Is that Howard Johnson's?
Howard Johnson's. This guy worked as the master chef for Howard Johnson's. I thought.
When he came
I've
to
always
country.
Thought any time I met him, what were you thinking of?
Oh my gosh, how funny!
Yeah. So, but anyhow,
how did you both get into this business, into doing the radio?
Well, I mean, it started out. I mean, I was my training was actually in art history. Believe it or not, it's funny because what's her name? Ruth Reichel and I both were in graduate art history school at the University of Michigan. And look where we ended up, you know. I mean, not that I ended up with like Ruth Reichel, but I mean, it's that kind of funny combination of art history and food. But I mean, I got into broadcasting originally with the art history. I did television, I did radio with that, and writing, and I did a lot of writing, and then I got into restaurant reviews. I was a restaurant editor and so forth, but I also had a radio show, and somebody who knew the radio show was starting a radio station, and asked me, and I always did it as a two-voice thing, which works better than a single person just talking, you know, giving their thoughts. And so we started doing it has a talk show, and the techs, it was a techie-heavy radio station, and they started podcasting. I didn't even know what a podcast was. But
no, I didn't either, and I got the responsibility of producing the show.
Wow.
But, yeah.
And how long have you been doing this?
This is, we're in our 21st year.
Wow, congratulations.
It's
I remember
amazing.
When we met in 2009, I think, 2008,
yeah,
something like that.
Probably earlier, even, I think. I don't know. But anyhow, so that's how, I think there's a relationship there somehow between art and cooking and food. I think there is. There's certainly a relationship between culture and food. So,
yeah, it's absolutely true. Well, I'm thrilled that you love the hot squeeze, and I can't wait to see you at the fancy.
Well, the variations too. So that's good incentive for us to look up your booth and so forth. They already registered.
Let me just see if I can. Hold on, I forgot the number of our booth. Just 1 minute, I'll give it to you. Give me 1 second. I took a slightly bigger booth this year.
Well, you know, the show itself is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I don't know how they, I mean, if they outgrow where they are, where are they going to go?
It's booth 5205.
5205, got it. Right.
I don't know where they're going to go.
I don't know how, I mean, the Javits is huge, but it's, I think they're outgrowing it even. So, but I mean, I hope they don't move to Las Vegas like they did the Winter Fancy Food Show.
Yeah, it's,
But you know, anyway. Back to this, as huge as the show is, I mean, there has to be really intense competition for you in your category of what you do.
I'm sorry, say that again?
There must be really intense competition.
Yes, there
in
is.
Your sphere.
But you know something? I believe there's room for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think if you do something well, you know, you're going to stay. You know, I always feel also it's not just a question of, you know, yes, it's a crowded space, and but I believe, you know, I'm selling not just a jam, but I'm also selling my reputation.
Oh, you,
you know,
are.
What
yeah.
I believe is good, and the kind of company we run and the kind of people we are. And when people come and work with the Gracious Gourmet, you're working with a company that values honesty, integrity, you know, standing behind our products, making sure that they, you know, are that they, you know, are the best quality possible. And we work to keep our customers. I work very hard with that. The people who work with me work very hard. And, you know, we do the best we can.
Well, you do a great job in everything from the ingredients you work with, the product, the inspiration for the flavors, and the packaging, too. And, in fact, I think that whoever does your written copy, a promotion copy, deserves a pat on the back because the information I got with Hot Squeeze is a classic. It's beautifully written.
Oh, thank you. I'll tell her that.
Tell her that because it's anonymous. But let me tell you, listeners, you'll drool by reading it and when you're reading it and rush out to find this product. Well, Nancy Wexelbaum, I'm just your biggest fan. And continue along, and we'll hopefully see you in June. Mm-hmm.
Well, looking forward, and I just want to thank both of you for your continued support. It means a lot to me.
Well, we trust you and your products, and that sums it all up.
Well, thank you so much again, and I will I'll send you Charles's information as soon as we get off the phone.
That's great, and I look forward to meeting him too.
Okay, I'll copy him on the email so he so he's a part of that.
All right.
Alrighty.
Nancy, Hot Squeeze, listeners think Gracious Gourmet and Hot Squeeze both.
Hot
Thanks,
Squeeze
Nancy.
Forever and the Gracious Gourmet forever.
thank you, Nancy.
Thank you for everything.
Uh-huh.
All right, we'll talk soon.
Okay.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Oh, this is going to be such a fun interview for me, at least, listeners. I'm going to be talking to Rosa Jackson. From Nice, about her latest, is this your only cookbook, Nice Wives. It's called, subtitled, Market-Inspired Cooking from France's Sunniest City, which I think it certainly is.
Listen up, listeners. This young lady's name, I mean, where she lives, it's an argument over whether or not it's Nice or Nice.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I
didn't know at all.
I
do you remember? Yeah, it was a long time ago, but when I was growing up, we had cookies called Nice cookies, and we used to pronounce them Nice, but they were actually named after the city of Nice, and that was my earliest introductions to the existence of this place with palm trees that I now live in.
Well, I mean, you introduced the idea about your background, which you have to know is most fortuitous and essential to where you ended up being.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give our listeners just a brief description? You're born in Canada, right?
I was born in Canada. My parents were British. My mom was originally Czech, but had lived in London. They emigrated in the 1960s, and so I grew up in Canada. But during my childhood, we spent 2 years in Paris. So the first year I was 5 years old, and the second I was 12. And I feel that I got different things out of each of those years, of course, because of my age. But I'd say the first year I really discovered French pastry, and that's what stuck with me learning French and going to kindergarten, but also eating croissants and eclairs, you know, whenever I wanted to. And the second year I really became fascinated by French cooking. So each of those years really developed my love of food and of exploring different cultures and meeting people from all over the world, because my school in Paris happened to have a very international, it wasn't an international school, but it was in an area with a lot of immigration. So I, you know, it just exposed me to a lot more things.
Yeah, well, listeners, I mean, Rosa knows what she's talking about. She spent a great deal of time in France, as well as other parts of the world, and some of that sneaks into the book. She's also a food writer and a very organized person, because one of the things that comes out immediately at me is how well organized all this information is. And it's no small amount of information.
That's right.
I mean, we get hundreds of cookbooks, and this one is just, I think it's a genius cookbook. I love it.
Oh, so, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Well,
now you have a background in restaurant criticism. You have your cooking background. You have a cooking school. You give tours of Paris. Are you going to be busy with the Olympics this year?
Yes. So the Paris tours, I started off doing them. Actually, I was one of the first people to ever do tours of the food markets in Paris because I started in 1995, and that was before food tours were a thing. And I also, the same year, worked for the Cordon Bleu Cooking School as an interpreter. So I had really just moved to Paris as an adult and was trying to make my way there. And those two experiences, working at the Cordon Bleu and starting my own business, even if it was a very tiny business at the time, were really helping me go in the direction I wanted to go in, which was food writing and also communicating about food in any way I could, which meant also touring and what I do now, which is teaching.
Well, I mean, your writing is extraordinarily sophisticated. I mean, you have to know that all those years spent in front of your keyboard were worth it.
That's good to hear. Because there was a time when I had started concentrating more on teaching than writing. I was pretty much a full-time writer for the time I lived in Paris, which was 10 years of my life. And then I started my cooking school in Nice, and there wasn't so much time for writing anymore. And at one point, I thought I had really put it aside. But when COVID happened, that's when I thought, this is the moment that I have to write my cookbook. So it came back. And
gave it time.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you lay it all out in your introduction, mm-hmm. and you explain how you ended up in Nice. Your photography, when I talk about certain really star-struck, I mean, this photographer that fabulous.
Yeah, so he's a friend of mine. I met the photographer's named Jan Hendrik van der Westhuizen, which is a South African name. And I met him shortly after he moved to Nice, and he was thinking about starting his own restaurant, which is now a very well-known Michelin-starred restaurant. And he's a brilliant person who's great at design and photography, and I hardly dared ask him if he would consider photographing this book, but I thought it never hurts to ask, right?
And that's what they all say.
He said yes. And we had so much fun doing it because he lives here, so we could do a photograph each season as it happened, which was a real luxury for a cookbook.
Yeah, it's all natural lighting, you said, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And real food. I mean, I've been on photographic shoots for food.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, appalling. It's some people who drool over the photography in these cookbooks should just know some of the tricks of the trade.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, like shellacking the vegetables. You know, just horrible.
I know. We didn't. I'm telling the truth when I say we did none of that.
You didn't.
I was cooking the recipes exactly as they're written, and he was using natural light. So that was how it worked, and I think it worked out well.
Well, you could tell that you were immersed in the community and the culture of Nice as
mm-hmm.
well.
And
and your profiles of some of the characters are wonderful. and as I said, you write so beautifully that it's a pleasure to be able to peek behind the curtain here and read about these people.
Thank you.
I must say that your pantry list, which of course all cookbooks come with a pantry list,
mm-hmm.
yours is one of the few I really enjoyed reading.
Oh, yeah. I remember writing that. I'd taken some time to work exclusively on my cookbook by going to Palermo for 3 weeks. I went to Palermo in Sicily, and it was really interesting because there are some parallels between Sicilian food and the food of meat.
I'm Sicilian by background.
And
that was another great revelation, reading your book.
Yeah.
I think I OD'd on Swiss chard growing up.
Yes. And chickpea flour, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I still to this day always have hummus in my refrigerator.
Yeah.
And canned chickpeas. So, but there's so many parallels between how I grew up in a Sicilian household and what you're talking about the Nicoise experience. There's so many of them. The use of Swiss chard is one of them. I mean, I don't know of anything that didn't put Swiss chard into it.
Because it grows in that climate, in that Mediterranean, sort of dry, hot Mediterranean climate. It grows all year.
And some of your other, I just learned some interesting things about Herbe de Provence. And you touch on that subject a little bit. It's really interesting because everybody assumes they know what's in that spice combo.
Right, yeah.
And it's different. Every time you turn a corner, it's different.
Exactly. And it really depends on what people have on hand. It's not really a defined recipe. It's what you have, and the proportions can change. And, you know, some people put bay leaf, some people put savory. Some people put oregano, others don't. And also what we call bouquet garni, which is when I was working at the Cordon Bleu, was a little bundle of herbs that you put into a sauce or stew. But in Nice, it's actually a big bunch of freshly picked rosemary and thyme and bay leaf.
When we lived in Australia, an Australian food vendor had me in hysterics because he called it bouquet garni.
So I can imagine that would be Australian accent.
But I can't look at the words now without absolutely getting hysterical. Bouquet garni. And the other thing that caught my eye, I thought, oh boy, my schoolgirl French is really failing me this time. This is a merit of something or other. And I thought, what in the world is this about?
What was that?
You have merited the something or other. I can't remember what it was. I thought, is my memory of French, my school girl French, that bad?
Oh dear.
But then I read, and actually it wasn't so bad.
Oh, good.
So, now you organized this book. But before I get into that, you organized it, of course, by seasons. But one of the things you mentioned, and I actually never even thought about it, is that people assume that Nicoise cooking is classical French.
That's right. They don't usually know. Most people
tell us the difference. Tell our listeners the difference.
Yeah. Most people who come to my cooking classes, one of the first things I'll ask is, do you know what the word Nicoise means? Because many people don't. And they've heard of Salade Nicoise, but they don't necessarily associate it with the city of Nice. So first I explain Nicoise is something or someone that comes from Nice. And Nicoise cuisine is a very particular style of cuisine because of Nice's relationship to Italy. And Nice was not actually French until 1860. So for several centuries of its history, it belonged to the Kingdom of Savoy, which was ruled out of Piedmont and Sardinia. And so it's much closer to Italian cuisine than to classical French cuisine. And is also related to other Mediterranean cuisines, like we said, Sicily, and also even Tunisia. You find some similarities. So it's really a Mediterranean cuisine, which makes sense since we are on the Mediterranean.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, what was the recipe? What was it, the pizzoladia? I don't remember what.
Yeah.
You know Sicilian pizza. Have you had Sicilian pizza?
Yes, yeah.
And what is it? It's anchovies and onions.
Yeah.
And dough.
Yeah, anchovies.
And olive oil.
Very, very, very similar.
No tomatoes whatsoever in sight.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. I have so many things to tell you, ask you. as I said, I wish you lived next door so we could be friends.
Yeah, we could just have some coffee.
You organize it by seasons because that's basically how Nicoise live.
That's right. There, for me, there was no other possible way to organize this book because
right.
we really cook in a way that's dictated by the seasons, and we go to the market first before deciding our menu.
Right. And fresh, as most people think of it, doesn't even come close to fresh as it's practiced in Nice.
That's right, even compared to Paris, because Paris is not as close to agricultural land. There are farms
right.
around Paris, but because Nice, the products are really coming straight down from the farms to the market, the fruit is going to be more ripe than I ever really thought in Paris. And because it's also hotter here and the fruit ripens in a different way. And so what I first thought was overripe fruit when I first arrived in Nice was just ripe fruit. You know, it was the way fruit is actually meant to be eaten.
Yeah, well, it's true. Peter likes markets too. He got most distressed over the whole EU thing because he loved seeing the poultry, or as you call it, fowl, hanging with the feathers on, and that got torn away. Right, Rabbit?
Yeah, you can. the EU
people came up with regulations that hadn't existed before, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it did change. I remember when I first started going to the market in Nice 20 years ago, a lot of the farmers made their own cheese, and then they stopped because they couldn't have, you know, the stainless steel kitchen was too much of an investment, but they needed that to meet the EU standards. So those small farmers that were just making a little bit of cheese stopped, and, you know, people really had to invest a lot if they wanted to sell cheese.
Well, then you mentioned, I hadn't even thought of it, is there's not a whole lot of cheese in the Nicoise kitchen, right?
No, it's not a dairy-rich cuisine at all. It's based on olive oil as the cooking fat. And then there are cheeses produced, which are mainly small, fresh goat cheeses and sheep's cheeses. And people do eat them, but more as a separate course than incorporated into the foods. So I think it's because there's not very large quantities. And it's, you know, and somewhere like Savoie, you know, on the border of France and Switzerland, they have so much cheese, they just cook with it and eat it all the time. But in Nice, it's kind of a precious commodity. So if you have a local goat cheese, you're more likely to savor it, maybe with a little olive oil and some bread and some herbs, but not add it to a dish as much. You know, it can happen. Sometimes we use a soft cheese, which is called Brousse, which can be goat or sheep's milk, and it's almost like a ricotta, and that can be used in certain dishes. But it's not, it's an easy place to be if you can't have dairy.
Oh, here's that one I was talking about, Merde de Caen.
Oh, that one. So that is, that's not French, it's Nisart.
Yeah. It's what? So,
it's the local language, so that is not a French phrase. It's a phrase from the local language, which is called Nisart. And
I mean, when I saw Merde, I thought, am I really screwing up my
you're
school friend?
Actually, it's very accurate. That is what that title means. So the for anyone
it
listening
does.
Who
it's
doesn't, so for people who don't know
her,
what that
turd, you
yeah.
Said.
Yeah, it means Merde de Caen is a type of green gnocchi that's eaten in Nice. And because of the shape of it, because people shape it so that it's pointy on each end, they the name jokingly refers to it as dog poop.
It's funny.
Yeah.
What are, just mention some of the really most typical foods from this region that our listeners would expect to encounter or that you feature in your book and you want to call attention to.
So things that you must eat if you come to Nice are sokka, which is the chickpea pancake. You sold as a street food at the market, also around the port area. There are a few well-known sokka places. And it's a very simple chickpea pancake. It normally isn't flavored with any herbs or spices or anything. It's just chickpea flour, water, olive oil, and salt, cooked in a copper pan in a very, very hot oven, often a wood-fired oven, and then torn into pieces and eaten with your fingers. And it was originally a worker snack, something people would eat in the middle of the morning or late afternoon to get them through the day when they were doing manual labor, because it's got protein and fat, which keeps you going. Another one is the what you see on the cover of the book, which is a sandwich called pan bagnat. And pan bagnat is, again, a term from the local language. It's not French. And it means, it translates as bathed bread. And it's a tuna, egg, anchovy, and vegetable sandwich. And basically, it's salade niçoise in a bun, because salade niçoise, which is something else that, you know, everybody, most people have heard of salade niçoise, but the internationally known version is not the same as what you find in Nice, because in Nice, they don't use potatoes or green beans. It's a raw vegetable salad with crunchy, you know, fresh vegetables, which will change depending on the season. So in spring, they would use spring onion, artichoke, radishes, fava beans, things like that, always tomato as well. And then in summer, it's going to be more like these long, skinny green peppers that we have here. They'll slice them into rings and add those to the pan bagnat, and also celery. Thinly sliced celery can be added as well. Usually you will find radishes and spring onions any time of year. And it's more a spring and summer and fall sandwich. You see it all year round here, but it's best when tomatoes are good.
Right.
So that's another one that you have to taste. And pis saladier, which is the flatbread.
This stuffed vegetables, little baby vegetables stuffed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, of course. The petit farci, which I name my classes after that dish, which is how much I love it. And it's small vegetables which are stuffed with a mixture of meat, chopped vegetables, parmesan, egg, and breadcrumbs. And originally it was a thrifty way of using up leftover meat. And now it's a dish in itself, so much so that there's a wine bar in Nice that holds what they call the Petit Farci World Championships each year.
Oh, yeah, I meant to ask you about that.
Which is a riot. It's really fun. They usually have a big panel of 12 chefs judging, most of them Michelin starred. They take it very seriously. And it's really a lot of fun, and just shows how that dish is important. And each family has their recipe, so you'll often find the mamie, who are the grannies, who are really the keepers of niçoise cuisine, who will come to that competition and taste the different versions and have lots of opinions about how they're made and whether it's as good or better than their own version. So it's really fun also to listen to the commentary as people taste them.
Right. Well, you probably, like me, were in the position of being a judge frequently. The one I couldn't deal with was I had to judge a pierogi contest.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that would be a little filling, shall we say.
I felt like I was eating rocks. Now, you have a great number of dessert recipes in here. Mm-hmm. And now, growing up, my mother happened to be a talented cook and pastry maker. But, we never had all these desserts every day.
Right.
You have a lot of desserts in here, which I never associate with niçoise food.
Yeah, so desserts in France are a little more universal than the cuisine itself. And there are certain things that you'll find wherever you go. But what makes these desserts more local to Nice is the use of fruit, because in Nice, most desserts that you'll have will be either just fruit by itself, or some kind of fruit tart, or some other use of fruit.
Yeah.
So fruit is
we
really
we had berry pies. We had a lot of berry pies.
I did sneak in a recipe for coffee shoe pastries, because I've always loved coffee eclairs. It was one of my childhood discoveries.
Oh, right.
I lived in Paris.
Right about them.
And it happens that the coffee shop that I love in Nice, in the old town where they roast their own beans, gave me a recipe. When I asked them for a recipe with coffee, they gave me this coffee choux pastry, so I thought it was perfect. So not all the recipes are, you know, traditional recipes that people have made for hundreds of years. In Nice, some of them are more recent that local, you know, chefs and cooks gave me that are their favorite desserts that are using local ingredients.
Yeah, I mean, and I was surprised to find your mussels recipe because it's,
oh, yeah.
They're not really associated with, I mean, the production of them.
Yeah, so there are some, you'll never find local mussels at the market here, but there are wild mussels that can be found. But mussels,
really?
You know, they're easily transported. So we find mussels at the market that come from Brittany or Normandy. And that recipe with the saffron and tomato is quite a Provençal way of making them. And it's really nice in summer.
What did you find the most surprising when you finally relocated to Nice?
I found the people very different. So compared to Paris, my son was very little when I moved to Nice. And when he went to daycare in Paris, people were very, you know, the women were very lovely, but rather reserved with the kids.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they weren't very expressive of emotion, whereas in Nice, the emotion is out there. And as someone who grew up in Canada, where people are also a bit more reserved, I couldn't quite understand at first, were they angry? Were they happy? Were they arguing? Were they joking? Yeah. Even though I spoke perfect French, you know, it wasn't a question of the French. It was just like, what emotion are they expressing? Because often their humor can be like really teasing people and insulting them. And then everyone laughs, you know. And with the kids, they really, you know, they were much more, you know, hugging them, you know, just more expressive physically as well. So I discovered the Mediterranean culture moving to Nice, which I found fascinating because it's not so far from Paris. You know, it's a 1-hour flight.
But Paris is so unique.
Different.
I mean, Paris.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, it's so different.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Our friend who lives part of the year in Paris. He went to He went to school in Paris. So did his wife, who's German. He's American. She's German. But anyhow, he settled in. But I'm kind of surprised that he settled in so easily. I mean, he speaks perfect French, but there's no way, if even grammatically precise French. Mm-hmm. Will be accepted by a Parisian if, in fact, you have an accent.
Right, for sure. And the same in Nice also. They will always detect an accent and comment
on it. Oh, they will.
It. Yeah, yeah.
But they're more accepting.
I think people in Nice are, it's a smaller town mentality, you know, because Nice wasn't really a big city until relatively recently. So there's still a different way of thinking and looking at things. And so they're very interested. Like when they hear an accent, they're more just interested to hear about where you come from and to know more about you. So it's a curiosity more than anything.
Yeah, well, I mean, an ocean side. I mean, from Sicily, it's a corridor country, and there's something of everything in there.
Yeah.
I imagine that there's something of everything in Nice as well.
Yeah, I mean, historically, there were many English and Russians who came to the Riviera.
Yes.
And, you know, many other immigrants as well. So even though there are people who have been here for generations, and they're the true Niçois, there are so many people who've moved here from different countries. And it's very, you know, if you're a recent immigrant to Nice, it's pretty easy to meet other international people.
Right. Is anything else you'd like to add about this cuisine? I mean, make sure the people, our listeners, know how to get in touch with you for your tours, and also your cooking school. How about giving us some contact information?
Yeah, my cooking school is called Les Petits Farcis, as I mentioned, and the website is petitsfarcis.com. And my Paris food tours have a website, which is edible-paris.com. And so, yeah, you can easily book a class online on my website or email me. I also have an Instagram, which is petitsfarcis_edibleparis, so the two of them together on Instagram. And you can keep up with what I'm doing there. But the best thing is to sign up for my newsletter, because that way you'll get all the information once a month. And I talk about all my travels, because I also love to, I lead culinary trips as well to Morocco and Japan. And
see, this is the other part of why I think if we live together, we're close to each other, we'd be best friends. Because we're wanderers. Peter and I are both wanderers.
Yeah.
So you gathered he's English also.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so anyhow. So your newsletter, how do you sign up for that?
So I have a blog, which is rosajackson.com. So it's just my name. And from there, you can easily access my newsletter. You can sign up for my newsletter or through my website, Petit Farci. There's also a link there, or on Edible Paris. So any of those, you'll find the newsletter sign up form. And then you'll get an email once a month talking about what's new and, any of my travels. Often I include restaurant recommendations.
Oh, right.
So it can be fun.
Well, there's a woman in Rome that does all that, who's American.
Yeah.
But she won't, you know her.
Are you thinking of Elizabeth Mincelli?
Oh, no, we've interviewed her a lot. Who am I thinking of, Rabbit?
Her last name is Parla.
Oh, okay.
Parla, Katie Parla.
Oh, yeah.
Katie Parla, but she won't give out of these. She won't give you out of the information for free. you know. You can sign up for a tour, but I do understand that because I remember people were always asking me about places to eat around the world because we traveled a lot, you know.
Yeah.
And I guess it gets kind of tiresome. I thought, well, why should they, especially this woman called, and they were going to go on this big tour, and it was, they're going to fly, the Concorde or whatever it was, to London and spend 2 weeks in a fancy hotel, and then they were going to go to Paris, and they were going to take what's that train, across Europe, thinking to myself, why does she get all this information from me for nothing?
Well,
we forgot to mention that they said they reminded you that they dress for dinner every night on the train.
Oh yeah, right.
Oh yeah.
Formal attire is not an issue because they dress for dinner every night.
Well, it does sound fun, their trip.
So, but anyhow, well, you sound like you have your hands full. How old is your son now?
He's 21.
Oh, he's no longer a child.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's moved out now.
Yeah, my granddaughter's doing her first, she's in high school, her first school tour of Spain right now.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
It'd just be fun, honey. So great. But she's been with her parents and everything, but going with your school buddies is a different experience.
Yeah, it's a different experience. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, well, it's been a delight, Rosa, to meet you and talk to you.
Yeah,
and,
thank you.
Yeah. I really wish we could spend more time together. It would be lots of fun.
Yeah. Well, let me know if you do come to meet sometime.
Right. Will you charge me?
No, we can have a coffee or even a glass of wine.
We went with this chef we know in where was it, in Queensland, in Australia, and he opened a restaurant. And I mean, we would not, when we lived there, we lived in Geelong, and we like Sydney, and we've relatives in Tasmania and in Melbourne, you know, but we decided to go out of our way to this place in Queensland. And I mean, they asked us if we wanted some a drink when we got there. And we said, certainly, because we've been traveling a long time. They charged us for it.
Oh, that's cute.
it's gross. Anyhow, it's been so much fun talking to you. And I wish
thank you.
You much success with your book, because it's a very, very special book.
Thank you so much.
You know, and we're keeping this book. I mean, I have probably a couple hundred cookbooks in my hallway at all times. But
yeah.
This one's a keeper, and I thank you very much for it.
That means a lot. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.